Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. We're talking to Andrew McAfee, a principal research scientist at MIT's Center for Digital Business, and Eric Brynjolfsson, director of the Center for Digital Business and a professor at MIT's Sloan School, about their recent and widely debated book, Race Against the Machine. And Andrew McAfee, where we were talking before about not just low-skilled jobs that computers might displace, but lawyers, people who are maybe in the medical field. I mean, what is the limit for something like Watson? You know, you talked about Watson being on Wall Street. Sure. Where's this going?
The short answer is we don't know. And the one, the iron law that I learned when we were writing this book when it comes to computers and their capabilities is never say never. For example, we used to think that humans held the high ground in the ability to recognize patterns and the ability to engage in complex communication with other people. I don't think we hold the high ground, certainly in pattern recognition anymore. I do think that for particularly subtle or nuanced or emotional conversation, we're still better at that. But computers are encroaching on that pretty quickly as well. What we haven't seen yet is anything that I would call digital creativity, digital entrepreneurialism, a digital aesthetic sense. So there do still seem to be a set of human abilities and skills that haven't been deeply encroached on. On the other side, there's a set of physical skills. Walking across a room is something most human beings can do very easily, and computers are just now starting to get decent at fine motor skills and perception and coordination. So our bundle of physical stuff, if anything, is more safe from digital encroachment than a lot of our mental stuff.
But we have seen, you know, you talk in the book about programs like, for example, GeoFluent, which is technology from IBM and Lionbridge that takes words from one language and translates it into another language. And generally, we think of that as something complicated enough that a computer couldn't do it. It could do it word for word, but it wouldn't end up making any sense in the other language.
That used to be sort of one of the standard jokes when we'd make fun of machines is you'd occasionally take a computer translation and laugh at how silly it was. Well, no one's laughing anymore because the translations are as good or in some cases better than what humans are able to do. It's part of it's drawing on some new techniques, not just rule-based algorithms, but something that computers can do better than humans, which is look through vast big data databases, all the literature in French and in English, and do all sorts of matching and find subtleties that even the best scholar couldn't keep up with. And as Andy was saying, this is leading to a lot of skills that we had taken for granted as now being potentially automatable. And it's showing up in what's happening in labor demand. There has been a hollowing out of the middle of the wage distribution. Our colleague at MIT, David Otter, has a great chart where he's found that, interestingly, jobs at the lower paid end of the spectrum and the higher paid spectrum have done relatively better than those in the middle of the wage distribution. So gardeners, masseuses, truck drivers, those are all things because of the physical dexterity that humans have over millions of years of evolution. Robots still aren't at our par.
Good at being your masseuse.
Exactly.
And we don't consider restaurant busboy to be a very high wage or a very high skill job. It's an incredibly difficult job to automate. So I think that's going to be a safe profession for a while.
For a little while, yeah.
I wonder, though, you wrote this book when the unemployment rate was somewhat higher. Mm-hmm. It has dropped a bit to just over 8%. Maybe we are, as we head into a better economy, heading towards a lower unemployment rate. And maybe the idea of computers taking people's jobs is not something that's going to keep our unemployment rate so high for so long.
Well, I just want to clarify something. In the book, we point out that we don't attribute the recent recession to automation or technology. We're looking at broader long-term trends. We're looking at what's happened to employment and wages over the past 10, 15 years and going forward 15, 20 years. So there's certainly been a very severe recession, the worst one since the Great Depression that we've hit recently. The main causes of that have to do with the financial crisis and a lot of other things that are beyond the scope of this book. That said, we are having a surprisingly jobless recovery. And the last recovery was also relatively jobless. And each recession seems to be taking longer and longer to come back from. And we do think that part of the reason for that is that having laid off a lot of people, companies are realizing that they can make do without them, that they have technology that allows them to continue their operations without as many people as they had before. And so right now, although employment is coming back somewhat, we still have fewer people working than we did back in the late 1890s, despite massive growth in population.
And Andrew McAfee, part of your argument, right, is that you can have an amazing recovery. I mean, we've seen the stock market go up 50%. But it doesn't mean that unemployment is going to be commensurate with that, that unemployment rate is going to plummet to record lows.
And it hasn't been. And since the depths of the Great Recession, we have seen that GDP has come back. So our GDP is now bigger than it was than it's ever
been. Before recession, yeah.
Yep. Corporate profits are higher than they've ever been. Investment in equipment is higher than it's ever been. That rebounded incredibly quickly. We're spending money on servers and machine tools and things like that. What has not come back quickly is employment. And when you look at the percentage of working age people who have a job, it's getting a little bit better. It's still not good. And it is still lower than it has been in quite a long time.
So if you're looking at this chart that you talked about, where there's sort of the people at the top are doing really well, and the people at the bottom, the masseuses and the gardeners, the people whose jobs cannot be easily replicated by automation, right, are doing kind of well. What do you do about the vast middle? What do you do to try to restore jobs to those people?
Well, the short answer is we don't quite know. And so in that situation, the right thing to do is to crowdsource the answer to that question. And by that, we really mean entrepreneurship, which is just crowdsourcing the problem of economic growth and job creation. We say in the book that the single biggest cure for any of our labor force woes is economic growth, because you still can't have a computer do everything a person can do. And if you want to grow as a company, you need to hire people for that.
Right. One thing to bear in mind is that technology has always been destroying jobs and has always been creating jobs. In 1800, 90% of Americans worked on farms. Today, it's less than 2%. That doesn't mean all those people are now unemployed. People like Henry Ford and Thomas Edison and many others helped invent entirely new industries that profitably and beneficially employed those people. We need to do the same thing now. It's more difficult because this revolution, this technological revolution, is broader in scope and happening more rapidly than some of the earlier ones. So, but in our economy, it's entrepreneurs who are charged with the job of creative destruction, of identifying those new industries and opportunities. MIT professors can pitch in and throw some ideas over there. But ultimately, it's hard to predict exactly which combinations of technologies and peoples and market needs are going to thrive and which ones aren't. So we want to have parallel experimentation by hundreds of thousands or millions of entrepreneurs. It's happening to an extent. There's actually, I think, never been a better time in history than right now to be a skilled entrepreneur, just as there's never been a worse time to be a person with no special skills that can be easily automated. But as more people get engaged in trying to combine technology and humans in new ways, we're hopeful that we'll come up with productive uses for more and more of the labor force.
And entrepreneurship is absolutely still going on. It's one of the great features of our economy. One of the disturbing things that we see in the data, though, is something that some researchers at Brookings have called a jobs leak, which means that when you look at brand new firms, they're smaller. They employ fewer people than they did 10 or 20 years ago. So it appears to be able to start up a company and to grow a company while employing fewer people. And you can probably guess what Eric and I think is behind that trend. This is because automation and technology let you do a lot of things right from the get-go.
Right. You know, well, it's interesting. We talk a lot about entrepreneurship on this show. And almost everybody that we talk to comes in and says, I've never seen such entrepreneurial activity.
Absolutely.
When you compare
right.
what's going on now with what was going on 20, 30, 40 years ago, it's in a completely different league in terms of the masses of people that are trying and want to start up their own companies. Do you see this reaction a little bit?
Your guests are right. I mean, it's in a way, it's a supply and demand, that there has been tremendous chaos, turnover, creative destruction in the economy, call it what you will. A lot of people freed up, very skilled people that no longer had the jobs where they used to be. Technologies opening up new frontiers of possibilities. That is the mother's milk to entrepreneurship. And so it's not surprising that it's a great time to be an entrepreneur. Sadly, fast as it's happening, it's not happening fast enough to keep up with the destructive side of the technology that's automating things. And when people start companies now, they don't need to hire as many people. Our friend Hal Varian at Google calls them micro multinationals, a 5 or 10 person company that may have operations worldwide by leveraging the technology infrastructure, something that might have taken hundreds or thousands of people previously.
It's also true that when these companies are starting up, they don't seem to have much need, a lot of them, to hire mid-skill, mid-education level new employees. They are starving for programmers and web designers and data scientists. And some of these people, again, way at the high end of the skill range, the education range, and the wage range. But we have a very large middle class in America that by a lot of measures is hurting these days. And when I look at the entrepreneurial energy, especially out in Silicon Valley, where the buzz is just palpable, it's great. But I don't know that it's a solution to what's ailing the middle class.
Well, I wonder, though, is there a mismatch between the skills that are needed then for these entrepreneurial companies to grow and the skills that exist out there in a vast pool of labor that is looking for a job, but they don't have the skills that people who are hiring want.
Well, so in the book, we have 19 specific solutions, but you can think of them in two broad categories. A set of them involve stoking entrepreneurship and getting people to identify some of these new opportunities. But another big chunk of the recommendations are around education and skill development so that those, you know, the raw material that entrepreneurs have to work with, it will be that much more fruitful and that some of the talents can be applied in those applications. So to improve education, it's not just a matter of throwing more money at the problem, not that that would necessarily hurt, but it really has more to do with making the educational process more productive and more efficient. And here, technology can be part of the solution, just as it's been part of the problem. I think K through 12 education, university education, and skill development in vocational areas are all still really kind of 19th century models currently, and we can use technology very effectively to, at least in some areas, to amplify the abilities of teachers to convey new skills to people.
And the education industry does need to change a bit. Rahm Emanuel, who's now the mayor of Chicago, looked around and said, I've got companies who want to locate in Chicago and hire people. They can't find the people with the skills they need in this era of high unemployment. And we have a lot of community colleges around the city who are graduating a lot of people evidently without the right skills. So he is putting together a coalition of industry, the educational system, and the city of Chicago to try to develop curricula that will turn out people, again, in the middle of this education, the middle of the wage range, who will have human capital that's valuable to companies these days. I'm a lot less worried about the elite institutions and the data scientists of the world than I am someone who thinks, look, the right thing for me to do at this stage of my career is go to a community college, go to a junior college, and that will prepare me for the workforce. We have to make sure we honor that, the other side of that bargain.
Andrew McAfee and Eric Brynjolfsson from MIT, authors of Race Against the Machine, thank you so much for joining us. Great discussion.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for joining us this hour. Remember that if you missed any part of this show or any show, you can find us on the web at wgbh.org/innovationhub. We will be back next week with more big ideas. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub on WGBH 89.7 Boston Public Radio.